Football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek has plenty of tickets to concerts, comedy, and theater, too. I actually have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. In fact, I've used it many times before, including this season, just to get tickets to a game myself. Good time had, of course, and plenty of bacon at that one. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Took him out of the game in terms of relief pitching late in a close game. What do you make of this bullpen?
Well, I can make a hat. I can make a pterodactyl.
This is the Fantasy Focused Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hello, welcome. It's Thursday. It is August 16th. This is the Fantasy Focused Baseball Podcast, and I am Tristan H. Cockcroft. The H is for happy. I haven't said that in a long time, so you know what? I'm happy. Well, maybe I'm not. We'll see. Anyway, joining me today in place of Eric Carabel, AJ Matz joins me as always, my good friend, colleague, and the smart points league guy. We'll have lots of points league discussion coming up, I would presume, right, AJ?
The J stands for just don't throw at me, man. Just keep the ball down, please.
We'll be making some points in a few minutes. Hey, you know what? Anthony Kalatayudis behind the glass, pushing the buttons, making this all happen. Get things started. Keep Anthony busy. We'll get right into the buzz. I'm lying. I'm not happy. AJ, I'm sure you know why I'm not happy.
Gee, why are you not happy, sir?
I have no idea. This is what really frustrates me, and I hate to go on a rant here, but I can't help myself. I'm annoyed about this. We like starting the podcast with positive news, great stories, you know, positive spins, uplifting things. And, you know, it seems like every time we're talking about injuries or some of the thing that's kind of getting us down, Ronald Acuña Jr., I wanted to start this by just singing the guy's praises. He's tops on the player rater since the All-Star break. That's using the past 30-day split on our ESPN player rater. He's been having a tremendous year. He homered in 5 straight games. He had leadoff homers in 3 straight games. And then he gets drilled by a 97.5-mile-per-hour fastball in the first pitch of the game by Jose Urania of the Marlins. And, of course, you know, chaos ensued from there. I'm aggravated about this. Now, Acuña, just to give a little update here for the fantasy purposes, he did stay in this game briefly. Then when he was out in the field, had a little bit of a flare up there, had cramps, they said, and they took him out of the game. He'll have a CAT scan on Thursday. So we'll see what the injury situation is with him. But I'm aggravated about this. No matter how you want to spin it, it was deliberate by Urania to do this. It drives me nuts when we're losing key players, especially exciting ones like this. And the other thing, too, is he's in the middle of a historic stretch. He's the first guy to do this at so young an age, to have 5 homers in a row. And at least I'll say this, AJ, there's a positive about this for me. The records, or at least the record streak, or the chance for the record streak, stands. It was just a hit by pitch in the first game, and by the MLB rules, the streak will stand when he comes back. But when do you think it will be? What's your take, AJ, here? Acuña's great, great stretch recently. He's one of the most exciting players in fantasy for Dynasty. How do you spend the rest of the year for him and next year, keepers?
Well, you know, obviously you worry about what I was worried about when he stayed in the game is that is it going to stiffen up on him? Is it going to swell up on him? Obviously, you hope it's not broken when it initially happens, and he stayed in the game. So perhaps, immediately I was like, all right, maybe it's not the worst case scenario. I'm not concerned once he comes back, but I would not be surprised if he's sore for a few days and they just, maybe pinch hit him before they start him kind of situation, just to kind of ease him back into things. But it was not pretty to see. It was, you know, we talk a lot about these unwritten rules of baseball. The number one rule should be don't throw at somebody because they are good. You know, I understand if you know, he had been showboating and, you know, doing a bat flip and prancing around the bases when they're down 11-2 or something like that. I mean, I think we can all get behind that being a jerk move. But, you know, I think Major League Baseball has to clamp down on this. If I were in charge of discipline, Ureña would not pitch again this season. It's not like that, you know, we're ruining the Marlins' playoff chances by doing a suspension like that. Suspend him for the rest of the year and let's stop this nonsense.
I agree with you. I would do the same thing. I'd levy the same thing. I mean, I don't care what the explanation was. It was deliberate intent to me. Fourth guy in history using the ESPN stats and information data to hit the first batter he faced in the game. The most recent to do this was John Lackey in 2009, and then promptly get booted from the game or leave the game after the one batter. And I believe all four of those did get ejected. Scott Ellerton was one, and there was one in 1965, I think. but yeah, you can't just levy a 5-game suspension about him. I mean, I know we're talking a little more baseball here than we are fantasy, but you can't just levy a 5-game suspension. That's just not even missing a start in the rotation. You can't throw like that with intent. And this is the other thing that gets me, AJ. There are a lot of players who have been getting hit by baseballs lately, and all of them have happened to have been bad luck. This was not bad luck. This was more leaning towards intent. I mean, we watched James Paxton get hit by a line drive recently. Trevor Bauer gets hit by a line drive recently. Matt Carpenter got hit by a pitch yesterday, which, at least to my read, didn't seem like there was much intent involved here. We don't want this. I don't want to be talking about Ronald Acuna's fantasy potential for 2019. I want to be talking about Ronald Acuna's fantasy potential on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we play fantasy baseball to add a level of fun to the mix. And it's, you know, I get it. People get hurt, and I obviously people slump, and we don't have any actual control over these things. But, I mean, when the people who do have control over these things do something that puts a player's career in jeopardy, it's just, it has to stop. I mean, this is not even getting into all the other, you know, off-the-field issues that we sometimes have to deal with, and whether leagues are tough enough on suspending people in those situations. This happened on the field. It is in their purview, and it needs to stop.
Yeah, we need to stop dealing with these unwritten rules of baseball. I mean, it's getting just way overplayed. My take is, you know what, just get the guy out. Just get the guy out. That's all that matters. Anyway, Acuna, so AJ, we do want to talk about his keeper league potential here because he is having a tremendous year with this recent hot stretch, 288 batting average, 19 homers, 43 RBI, 8 stolen bases for the year. If you project those to a full calendar year on the ESPN pages, it's only 93 games played. 26 home runs, 59 RBIs, 11 steals. If you gave him the full 162, took the injuries out of here, that's looking like a player who's between 35, 40 homers, stealing somewhere between 15 and 18 bases, batting about 290. Do you think he beats those numbers next year? Where would you draft him going into next season?
Well, you know, it's difficult to project simply because, you know, I would have liked to see the streak play out and see how long he could stay this hot. You know, we are talking about really a really, really hot 2 weeks in terms of the .375 batting average, 8 home runs, and 3 steals in August. You know, heading into August, he was a .264 hitter. He had 11 home runs and 5 steals. I mean, those are not bad numbers by any stretch of the imagination, and he's only going to get better. But I would have liked to have seen how he finished the season without something like this interrupting the flow there. Would have given me a lot more optimism going forward. I mean, I still had him before yesterday in my top 40 hitters for the rest of this season, for a full season, assuming that he is able to adjust to anyone seeing him for another time and, you know, the people getting the book on him. Top 25, yes. I don't know if I'm necessarily ready to put him into the top 2-3 rounds just yet in terms of top 25 hitter.
Among hitters, yeah, okay. That's what I was curious about. Because, I mean, I can make the top 25 overall case for next year. I think it's a little easier to do it for hitters, and I would certainly treat him as one of those. The things that strike me about him. He's cut down on the swings and misses. The contact rate has improved a bit. Still some more room for growth there. The walk rate's up 2% since the All-Star break. That's a very good sign. He's also hitting, AJ, a wide variety of pitches here. If you look at the pitch tracking data, he's actually doing very well against all different kinds of offerings. So this is not the kind of guy that I think you can test with breaking pitches next season. I do think that this is going to keep up going quite well for next year as well. He's 21 years old going into next season. I'm looking, to me, is probably a fourth round pick. I think this is definitely the kind of guy you're building around. Very, very exciting player.
Absolutely. Very exciting. But, you know, you also have to take it to consideration. You know, he went like 1-for-14 against the Dodgers. This latest streak is predominantly against the Mets and Marlins. So, you know, obviously, I'm not saying that this is a fluke, but I am saying before I'm going to elevate him into that stratosphere, he's got to do it against the teams that have ace staffs from top to bottom.
Very fair. I should dig up the numbers against the top shelf talent out there. I know there are stats against the quality of pitchers out there. The other thing, too, I think he needs to cut down on the chase rate 29%. Anyway, getting to some of the other news there, I hinted at a few of them. Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer is on the disabled list now as of yesterday. He has a small stress fracture in his right fibula. He was hit by a line drive. I mentioned this before about the bad luck injuries by batted balls. This was the game against the White Sox. Jose Abreu was the one who hit him with the line drive. The timetable is currently unknown. This is not an injury that has an awful lot of past comps, so I'm not sure how much time he misses. But Bauer has had an unbelievable year, AJ. He's number 5 on the player rater. He's behind only Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, Justin Verlander, and Corey Kluber, at least at the time of the injury there. Bauer, your projections the rest of the year, concerns, and does this have any sort of impact to your opinion of him on in a keeper or dynasty league?
Keeper and dynasty, no, because, I'm not Stefania Bell. I don't know how these injuries heal and whether there's if this is a particular injury, one of those that, like, it's going, oh, because it's right in this spot, you know, oh, my goodness, it's danger. I would say for the rest of the season, I'm not counting on him. Even if he only misses one start, I don't know that I can count on him. I'm not cutting him. But, I'm preparing to go to the rest of the fantasy season without him, absolutely. Next year, assuming that this isn't one of those really just hit him in the wrong spot and he's going to be damaged for life, you know, I ignore the injury.
I would as well. I think the reason that the injury and the unknown timetable comes into play here is what we've been talking about a lot on this podcast this year, and that is the Indians' substantial lead in the Central Division, 12.5 games currently. So they have no need to push him back all that quick. And I do think they're just going to get him ready for the playoffs at this point. He's a key part of their playoff rotation, so that'll be really the thing to look at. I think he probably will get in a couple of starts, and hopefully they're during your fantasy playoffs head-to-head. K-rate, it's a career high, 31.5. That's a very, very impressive improvement by him this season. Looking at some of his pitch data here, not a lot of big changes. A lot more curveballs. Between this and last year, a lot more curveballs. That's really been the key to his success. So a real good year. Another pitcher to get to, James Paxton, mentioned him a minute ago. DL Wednesday, he went on that with a left forearm contusion. When you hear forearm, we all panic. Oh, no! It's the first step to Tommy John surgery. No, he was hit by a line drive. I don't panic here. This might be a minor thing. Jed Lowrie hit him with a line drive in his Tuesday start there. But Paxton, based on his injury history, AJ, concerns for him the rest of the year?
It's not a break or anything like that. I had him even before they both got hurt. I had him 2 spots ahead of Bauer in my pitcher rankings. But that's just because I just expect a little bit of regression from Bauer. But there's no question he's been phenomenal all season. Paxton, similar situation. When he comes back, you put him right in. This is not an injury, like you said. We're not looking Tommy John. We're not looking at a physical stress-type injury. This is an injury that was caused by someone hitting the ball at him. And those injuries, they happen. They're freak, but I don't sweat them.
And the filthy rumor is that the Mariners are 2.5 games out of a wild card spot right now, so they need him a little bit more than Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd agree. I'm not terribly concerned. I mean, he does have the injury history, but, you know, the DL stints he's had this season, I think, have kept his workload in check, as they seem to do every year. He's been very good around them. A little bit frustrating just not to give you a full 33 starts.
If it was a hamstring pull or a groin strain or something like that, I'd be a lot more concerned.
Right, right. It might be a 10-day minimum. We'll see. We'll see exactly how that one plays out. I want to talk a little bit about a debut for his new team, and that is Wilson Ramos' return from the DL for the Phillies. He went 3-for-4 in his first game here, a pretty key win for the Phillies against the Red Sox as they're trying to keep ahead in the wild card race. 3-for-4 with two doubles and a triple. He slotted sixth in the lineup for the Phillies. There's been some talk about how the Phillies would break down the order when Ramos came back, but what do you think of him? Where exactly would you rank Ramos among catchers at this point?
Well, first of all, it was really good to see him come back and just perform so well out of the gate, because that's, you're always concerned about a long layoff, and certainly the defense will come back, I think, faster than the offense will, and in terms of fantasy value, we don't really care about the defense so much. I had him ranked fairly low on the list. Just because I'm not sure how much playing time he's going to get in the new situation, and when he was actually going to be ready, when the bat's going to swing around. If he's going to be like right there out of the gate like this, definitely top 10. I don't see why he wouldn't be.
Yeah, this year with the catcher position being so poor, I mean, he was 11th for me on the DL. And granted, I was projecting him to come back at the time, but to see a game like this in day one, AJ, I agree with you. It's a very, very promising sign. At this point, I'd have to jump him ahead of guys like Robinson Chirinos and Mike Zunino. I can make the case he's probably up there with your Yasmani Grandal types. Might not be up there in the top five at this point, but in that 5 to 10 range at a very weak position. He's also a quality defensive catcher. I mean, he's very good at reining in the running game. That's also something you can say about Jorge Alfaro. So my only question is, does he play every day? And if he hits like this, I think he is going to find himself in the lineup maybe 2 out of 3 games. That's certainly a promising start by him. Let's do a little ride on our most popular segment, it seems like, the Closer Carousel.
The Closer Carousel.
They should charge for these rides, AJ. We're riding this thing like every day. Is this year just maddening for closers or what?
It has been ridiculous. Usually you can count on the bad teams not to have to change their closers because the opportunities are low, and even the bad teams are going through these rotational closer carousels of their own that just don't seem to have any end in sight. I think, you got one of those pay one price bracelets and you're just going on the ride again and again and again.
I updated my rankings the other day. It was on Tuesday afternoon. I updated them. And the thing that was amusing to me was the relief pitchers. If you look at my breakdown, it's a whole bunch of different colors for the ups and downs in the ranks. And that's the story of relief pitchers this year. The other story of relief pitchers this year is that my number 12 relief pitcher on the rankings is Will Smith. I mean, Will Smith, a guy who wasn't closing a month and a half ago. It's unbelievable what's gone on. Let's get to the Nationals first. I think that's really the big question here is, can they keep anybody healthy? Sean Doolittle goes on the DL. His replacement, Kelvin Herrera, goes on the DL. His replacement, Ryan Madsen, now goes on the DL. So the monster, and this is our shout out to Kyle Sapi, our great researcher who puts together awesome research packets for us in the morning here. The monster. I gotta dig this one up for you, AJ. It's a real good one. He actually had posted a hash brown. The Nationals have 41 games left, over under 38.5 Super Grover saves. You like it, right? Let's get realistic. I'm gonna give you a realistic number there. I like the note from Kyle. 8.5. 8.5 would be a fairly reasonable projection for a full-time closer over 41 game span for a winning team. 8.5 is the over under for Super Grover.
Well, and now that comes down to the continuation that they're going to be a winning team. And I don't necessarily know that they are. I look at their schedule and I see a lot of games still up with the Phillies, another series in Atlanta. They'll close out the year with, the Marlins and the Mets and a trip to Colorado, but if Colorado is still in the race, I just don't know that this is going to be a winning team. They play the Cubs, they play the Cardinals, they play the Brewers. I would say five saves for me. Porta.
I like it. I'm also taking the under. I might even take the under on five saves, but that's mainly because I have no idea how this bullpen is going to play out. AJ, you probably saw this note on Sean Doolittle. Sean Doolittle's working his way back, and the thing that caught my eye is that he's trying to figure out how to pitch through this injury. So I get the sense that he's not going to be 100% when he comes back, and I don't like this idea of a clouded bullpen in the back innings. When I'm looking for saves, I like Doolittle a lot, but if he's pitching less than full strength, extreme fly ball rate, it could be, you know, three or four different pitchers getting saves the rest of the way. Do you believe at all in Doolittle? What's your projection on him?
When's he coming back, right? When's he going to be ready to go, and when is the team going to have any confidence in using him in high-pressure situations? I don't necessarily think that any of those answers are going to be done in time for the fantasy regular season. In terms of the fantasy postseason, maybe you take a shot at him. I mean, I have him as my number 27 right now in relief pitching, and that's very optimistic, I think. But he's got the talent that if he can pitch through it, maybe, but that would then take those five saves away from the monster.
So do you want the good news first or the bad news first?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I need some good news.
I like it. I like this note. Kenley Jansen of the Dodgers. We're going to the Dodgers next. Some promising news with him. It seems that he's beginning to throw bullpen sessions there and that he could actually beat that originally projected timetable. They were looking at roughly a month for him being on the DL, and it looks like he's going to beat that. I don't know exactly what his ETA for return is, but that's a promising sign. But in the meantime, there's still some saves to fill for the Dodgers. So, AJ, it comes with the bad news. The bad news is, what do you do with the Dodgers bullpen? I mean, Scott Alexander's not been pitching particularly well lately. Caleb Ferguson, who got a couple of those multi-inning saves a few weeks ago, has an awful outing yesterday. They moved Kenta Maeda into the bullpen, and then they were, I don't know if you saw this one, AJ, he was forced to pinch hit in the ninth inning because they ran out of position players, which took him out of the game in terms of relief pitching late in a close game. What do you make of this bullpen?
Well, I can make a hat. I can make a pterodactyl. it's not pretty, but, you know, the advantage that the Dodgers have is that they have a lot of starting pitchers that they could use in this role if they want to, you know, like putting Maeda there, like putting a Stripling type in the back end of the bullpen and just use them until Kenley gets back. And I'm glad that he is going to get back at some point. I mean, I think we may be in a situation where this is one of those, you know, we've seen it in the NFL where certain players don't go into Denver. And I think that just might be a situation where we have to take that into account for fantasy purposes going forward. Maybe he won't pitch when the Dodgers go to Colorado in the future. But for the rest of this season, you know, we still have another trip to Colorado. We have the September 7th to 10th. So even if Jansen comes back, maybe we have to worry about him not going there.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, anytime that Jansen doesn't get a save chance, I'm still thinking that the upside play for fantasy is Maeda. I do like what the Dodgers did with moving him back there, but we haven't really seen any evidence in terms of the relief performance yet as to what he can contribute. So it is the great unknown, that Dodgers bullpen.
Messy. At least they had the benefit of Ryu coming back and being able to make these moves. And so they're getting healthy for the most part. And that, you know, when rosters expand, they'll actually be able to bring even more people into the mix, even if it's just for a batter here, a batter there.
We'll get to the other couple of closer things, but I want to spin on a tangent since you brought up Ryu. Hyun-Jin Ryu, 6 shutout innings yesterday, 6 Ks, no walks, 3 hits allowed. Thoughts on him the rest of the way? I mean, he's been a fantasy-relevant pitcher when healthy. I mean, the injuries have been a big question.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, you know, one of my big metrics is that rule of 7, where if you have an under 350 ERA and over 350 K to BB rate, then you are a points league menace. And he's always in that list if he has enough starts to qualify. And the injuries is what's been keeping him out. So I was very optimistic on him finally getting back into things and picking up so far. I'm very, very happy with what he's done. And I just hope he can stay on the mound.
I'd agree with you. I mean, he could give you high-level fantasy performance if he gives you another, I guess that would be about 8 starts at this point, 31% K rate. The other thing that catches my eye is the 55% ground ball rate. Very well done, has lowered the quality of contact numbers against him. And the underlying stats also kind of support him with the FIP and the XFIP, 282, 302. So pretty solid performance by him so far. I'd certainly add him, but you just never know when he's going to missed some time. Getting back to the closest, Toronto. I want to bring up Ken Giles, AJ. Two straight clean outings, got saves in those, and I think that that was a bit of a vote of confidence to throw him in there for saves after such a bad outing before those. Your thoughts on his value?
I think that it's a situation they wouldn't have gotten him if they didn't need him to kind of fill in this role, and he's the guy. You want to see what you got there. You really do. It's not like Toronto is going to be battling for the division title this season down the stretch. They need to start getting their ship in order and figuring out who do we offer contracts to, who do we keep, who do we get rid of in the winter meetings. And so you might as well just run him out there and see if he can handle it. I'm always more optimistic on a guy who gets traded over to a new team keeping that job than a guy who's been there, because why would you have made the trade if you're not contending otherwise?
Do you think he makes the top 15 fantasy closers the rest of the year at this point?
Ooh, top 15.
It's a weak class, so I think that the meaning of that threshold has diminished this year. But do you think he gets in there? Because for me, I think he makes a competitive case to be up there with the Romos and the Norrises, maybe even the Will Smith types. I think he's close to that.
You know what? I don't. But, I mean, I have a lot of these hybrid guys in my rankings that it's not necessarily all about saves. You know, obviously I'm going to have an Andrew Miller that's always going to be ranked ahead of guys like this. So, no, I don't think he's going to be that good. I don't. But I do think he'll end up getting the most saves of anyone in that bullpen.
The Twins bullpen, another one that's been a little bit tricky here, but AJ, I want to bring up Trevor Hildenberger's performance, two saves in a row against Pittsburgh, did that on Tuesday and Wednesday. Before that, he'd been pitching rather poorly, and that was the main question. I'm not going to hide behind bad calls here. I made a bad call on that. I really didn't think that they were going to go to Hildenberger, considering how poorly he had pitched leading up to the trade of Fernando Rodney. He's been the closer since then. What I do feel like I made a right call on, and I still believe this the rest of the year, so AJ, you tell me your thoughts on it, is I just don't think that much of the Twins' bullpen and their save opportunity potential the rest of the year, but am I wrong on that as well?
You're not totally wrong on that, certainly. I didn't have an issue with Hildenberger at all jumping in. I mean, he had a couple of rough outings against the Indians. I mean, that's going to happen. They're the Indians. Don't put them in the bullpen when they play the Indians. it's a matchup thing. It's a matchup thing there. You know, he's the best they have. And again, it's another situation where let's see what he can do. Let's see what he can do. You're not winning the division title here, so let's just see what he can do. And you can find out a lot about your team. And what it's going to look like next season. You need to give these guys a chance.
And if he does what he did the first half of the season and for chunks of last year as well, I think he can be. That's another guy who I could throw the top 15 fantasy closers threshold out there for you. If he gets back to that level from the first half and that final run that he had at the end of last season, I do think he could get up to that threshold. But I don't know. That recent blip concerns me. The 448 FIP, that's something that concerns me, and the walk rate's up. So, two games, not too bad. Worthy of a mention.
Yeah. Worthy of a mention, absolutely. You know, it's not like he's not like Avilon in Chicago, which is not worthy of a mention.
Ooh, the White Sox, yeah. That's a fun bullpen, isn't it? And I'm saying fun with the sarcastic hashtag tag to it. AJ, do me a favor, because I watch this guy so much. We need some help here. Diagnose Luis Severino for me. What's up? What's wrong? What's going on?
Well, you know, he faced the juggernaut that is the New York Mets lineup. And
14 runs yesterday, right?
Yeah. You know, can we face Dylan Bundy every day, please? Please, please?
Oh, he's been bad.
I'm not concerned in terms of next season by any means. I mean, he's going to be a top 10 starter in my rankings next season. I can't imagine, unless we find out there's some undisclosed injury that, keeps him out. In that sense, not concerned at all. In the short term, look, I think a lot of pitchers go through periods like this. I mean, this has been a very bad stretch. There's no two ways about it. But, you know, if he hadn't pitched so many innings last year, I might be more concerned, thinking that, you know, oh, maybe it's just he's overworked. But he's still on track to match last season. So I don't think it's that. There might be a bit of a dead arm period going on here, but I think he'll get through it. And I do think, while I no longer think he's a 20-game winner this season, I do think he's got some legs left for the rest of the year.
So my concern about the command of Severino's pitches has really been alarming me. The slider in particular, it's just not there. And I'll give credit where credit's due. MLB.com's Mike Petriello actually took a look at the slider breaking numbers and found some stuff on there that did suggest that there were some issues with it. In terms of speculating on his value for me, I do wonder whether that's really all the problem. And the thing for me is, if he's not tipping pitches as he claims he's not, then what is it? I mean, is it an injury? AJ, to your point about workload, yeah, maybe he is a little bit tired. I don't know. But there is something up. There's something up, and I am concerned about it. And I apologize, AJ. I shortchanged the Mets 2 runs. We got to credit them those 2 runs for a 16-run game, because it was pretty impressive.
You know, I will say I was a little bit distracted, because I kept flipping back to see if anything else would break out in the Braves-Marlins game. B, I was tired of listening to Keith Hernandez. And C, I was tired of listening to Keith Hernandez. So I did check out a little bit.
can't blame you. Game was in the books in like the third inning, I think. All right, let's get a couple of quick notes here. I want to bring up the Carlos Martinez thing. I'm actually out in St. Louis for a fantasy football event going on tonight. So I'm getting all news, all Cardinals, all the time here. And Carlos Martinez, this was an interesting one. The Cardinals report on him. He's on the DL right now. But the plan is to bring him back as a relief pitcher for the rest of the year, and then he'd be restored to the rotation next season. So that does spawn the question of dynasty value of Mr. Carlos Martinez.
Well, you know, this is an injury-related thing. Getting him back in as a relief pitcher, I mean, you know, okay, so they're going to David Price him. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and I don't have any issue with it whatsoever in terms of it impacting what we rank him next season. If with a full off season, he'll be fine, like going to spring training. I have to believe that until I hear otherwise. So I'm going to treat him as if he is the starting pitcher, Carlos Martinez, unless we find out, you know, if he soars in the role and he says, oh, I really like it, and they decide, you know what, you're a closer, we can deal with that. When we've heard stories like that before, and we'll deal with that when it comes. But for now, I don't think it impacts him at all. There's so many moving parts still to be determined.
Give me a rough ranking number among starters for next year, if you had to do it today.
If I had to do it today.
Regardless of role. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could project either role he's in, but where would you put him among starters today?
I would probably put him, you know, I would put him like 15.
Wow. Okay. You're more optimistic even than I am.
I'm going to give benefit of the doubt that if we learn that he's ready for opening day, and he's going to be in the rotation, 15.
Okay. I can make the case. I think that's the high end for him, and I don't think he's going to be drafted anywhere near there. I think we're looking at a number with a 3 at the beginning of it, and it's probably close to a number with a 4. To me, I'll throw like 32.5. I think that's my ranking over under for him today, just because it was a setback, this season. Not a good year. But I like absolutely. I like you're outlining the upside. I like it.
Well, and you know, obviously, if he gets into the bullpen and he struggles to get anybody out, then I'm going to revisit. But you said today, and today I'm going to be optimistic. Okay. Good news. We need good news.
We do. We need some uplifting stuff here. Yes, definitely.
You've got a car.
Hold on. Let me look under my chair. This is a really high chair here that I'm using. there's plenty of room for a car under here. It'd be great if I found one. Anyway, Will Myers. This is, I guess, uplifting, because we like the position eligibility stories in fantasy baseball. Will Myers has been brought back from the DL, played 3 straight games as the Padres' third baseman. They were dabbling with this in one of his rehab games in the minors, and here he is playing third. I think he's got less than 20 full professional games played at the position so far. The Royals at one point thought that was what he was going to be, but what do you think in terms of the outlook for Will Myers the rest of the year, adding that possible eligibility?
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting because certainly anytime anyone gets that extra eligibility and get to be slotted into different slots, fantasy value, it does go up. I think it's going to be, I don't know what necessarily this team is going to look like. It's got a lot of younger players, and this team isn't going to look anything next year like it looks right now. So I'm not entirely sure what to make of it. But I do think this is a death knell for any fantasy value for a guy like Spangenberg going forward. Certainly, I don't think he has any value. Really, I would get rid of him because he's going to play second base, but he's going to be platooned in there as well with Perella, and they need to work that out before I give Corey any value. At least he's in there. At least he's in there and he's playing and he's trying new things. This is what teams should be doing more of, quite frankly. It's like, if you're out of the mix and you have players who you want to see what they can do in different positions, move D. Gordon around the field like they're doing in Seattle. Like that, do these things before you get into the postseason if you're a playoff contender. If you're a team with nothing to play for, try things out. Have a little experiment. What can you lose?
The power bat outfielders, I think, are the ones who are going to benefit a little bit here. They've made it pretty clear that they're going to use guys like Hunter Renfro and Franmil Reyes. I mean, I think it's a plus for them. And as you said, AJ, it is a negative for guys like Spangenberg. And I mean, Jose Perella, who had already dropped into a reserve role. Sure. Christian Villanueva could get some experimental use at second and short. There's some talk of that. But, Eric Hosmer, he's not going anywhere.
Right. And maybe Jankowski gets a little more playing time that he wouldn't have gotten because he was kind of odd man out there in the outfield if Myers had come back. So maybe he gets a few more at bats and maybe he can put it all together. I mean, we keep expecting things from him, and it just hasn't happened.
So, Anthony, now it's your turn. I'm going to throw it to you here. We have some fun here. I'm going to keep you busy because, I like keeping you busy, having to press a lot of buttons at once here. Let's get to the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal!
So we mentioned Ronald Acuna Jr. having one of those on Monday. Ahmed Rosario of the Mets had the other that day. There were none on Tuesday. And Wednesday, we had combo meals from Anthony Rizzo and Todd Frazier. And Anthony, since I said I'm keeping you busy here, I hear you have trivia related to one of these two.
I do have trivia, boys, so we're going to play another song.
Trivia, trivia that Eric won't know.
We can splice in AJ on that. That AJ won't know.
There you go. That's what I was waiting for.
We'll do it live. All right. Rizzo, do you want to read the question there, Anthony, or shall I?
I'll read the question. Rizzo is one of two players since the beginning of last season has multiple games in which he homered and stole multiple bases. Can you name the other?
It's a good question. AJ, you got a guess on that?
I think I know the answer, but only because I got this guy at the trade deadline last season, and I think he did both games after the trade line last season. I believe it's Steven Souza.
Wow!
Well, I would not have known that at all if I hadn't owned him in fantasy.
Wow.
Managed him in fantasy.
Kudos. You get I'd say I'd give you the standing ovation here, but it's a little tough in this high chair. Well done. I would never have guessed Steven Souza Jr.
Resident Rays fan Leo Howell knew that as well.
Oh, Leo, I didn't give you credit right off the top. Leo Howell, our editorial watchdog. You've been watching silently here in the background.
That's the best kind of watchdog is the silent watchdog.
Hey, Leo, I was standing up for you. I'm a Rays fan by proxy, right?
Right, exactly.
I think I burned that.
He sure is.
Well, we're the fans of the probably not the worst, but not a good team in the East divisions, so we have a lot in common.
I do see you're on the grid here, and I'm so disappointed about that game yesterday, Rays Yankees. Oh, jeez. You know what? That's a good bridge here to get into the schedule. Let's talk about some of the games that are coming up here. On Thursday, Mr. Red Hot John Gray is pitching a road game against the Atlanta Braves. That's on ESPN Plus. That's the ESPN Plus game for the day. Julio Teheran is pitching for the Braves. And AJ, we keep talking about Rockies pitchers and the road starts, and John Gray has been maddening to predict home or road. Are you starting him here in Atlanta?
I'm not starting him here in Atlanta. Atlanta is I know that the Marlins have left town, but they are fired up, and I don't want anything to do with that lineup. There's something about the emotional carryover from that. I just think it's a danger territory.
Definitely a fair point. They could be bringing a lot of energy to that game. So I just hope Acuna's in the lineup. I'm not convinced there. And we'll see whether the other one I mentioned about being hit by a pitch, Matt Carpenter, in the Nationals-Cardinals game, which starts at 7:15 Eastern. That's a Tanner Roark versus Luke Weaver game. Weaver's pitching after missing his last start. He was scratched. Hopefully Matt Carpenter's in the lineup. That's another guy I do not want to see missing games. We want to say positive things.
Well, you know, right. what about this great game, Detroit at Minnesota? I mean, is that a matchup for the ages, you know, like close to 40 ages?
That's, you know what, that's a classic turn back the clock 10 years. We'd be so excited in fantasy. It's Francisco Liriano and Irvin Santana. And by the way, 10 years ago, remember, Irvin Santana was your Ben Roethlisberger of baseball. He was the guy you'd use at home and never on the road. Remember that?
Oh, joy, joyous.
Ah, that takes me back. To when I was 15 years old. Yes, I remember it well. Skipping all my high school classes, clearly, because I just don't remember them. All right, Friday's games. They started. Here's the other thing that's throwing me off. I'm looking at the central time numbers here, so I have to remember add the one. 6:05 p.m. starts the Mets and Phillies game on Noah Syndergaard against Aaron Nola. That should be a real fun one to watch. But you can watch on ESPN Plus the Rays. Hi, Leo. The Rays are playing on ESPN Plus. I have a hunch you'll be watching at the Red Sox, and it's the opener, started by Ryan Stanek against Brian Johnson. Now, I'm going to bring up Brian Johnson very quickly for you, AJ, here. Just in, you know, he's contributed a little bit since being moved into the rotation. Or am I overstating this?
Well, you're not overstating the fact that he's been brought into the rotation, but he's a matchup play. He's still a matchup play, and... you know, I don't necessarily think that I'm going to be streaming him this outing with a bunch of the other options available. I'd much rather take my chances with a potential blister from Marcus Stroman, Lance Lynn in that game, or you know, a Freddie Peralta, Jack Flaherty matchup, Milwaukee at St. Louis. I think there are a lot more pitchers out there I'd rather turn to.
Extra rest for Jack Flaherty in this game. I also like the Kyle Gibson game against Detroit. Detroit's offense has been awful lately. It's another guy I would definitely take a look at. Kyle Freeland pitching in this game. And AJ, I know we were kind of pessimistic, I think, about his prospects in fantasy going forward, but a road game against Atlanta. I'm not wild about that matchup. He has pitched a little bit better than some of the other options, certainly better than Tyler Anderson. And Derek Rodriguez pitches in Cincinnati. That's another one that's a tricky matchup because of the ballpark, and the offense is better than you think it is.
True, but I mean, I really like what Rodriguez has been doing this season. It's hard when you don't have a huge track record on these guys, but you know, I'd rather have him than Gio Gonzalez right now. I really would. I'd rather just roll the dice with him.
Gio's been awful. I think he has a 6+ ERA since the All-Star break. Oh,
yeah,
it's terrible.
You know, but you know, a month ago I wouldn't have said it. Even thought that, but it's where we are.
So we mentioned Luis Severino before. The ESPN Plus game on Saturday is at 1 p.m. That is Blue Jays at Yankees, and it is undecided, which I would say is likely going to be Sean Reed Foley, the rookie, going up against Mr. Luis Severino. Do you start Severino here? We raised our concerns before. For the short term, this start, do you use him?
I do not. I think... although I had just spent all that time saying that I'm optimistic that he'll get through this patch, I need to see that the patch is over. And I'm willing to, you know, potentially miss out on a quality start because all that means is that I'm going to then automatically insert him the next start. I'd rather have that surety and confidence in him before I put him back in.
It's a really bad day Saturday for streaming starters. I look at all the matchups here and even the guys that I find interesting from a pitching perspective. So the Rays, Tyler Glasnow. Leo, you'll love this. I love talking about Tyler Glasnow. I like what they're doing with him. He's facing David Price in Boston. I just don't like any options here. But Glasnow, worth a look here or worth a look going forward?
Yeah, I think going forward, he's worth a look. You know, it's the weekend. Where are you against your opponent? Do you need the wins? Do you need the innings? Do you need counting stats? If so, there are worse matchups you can go with. at the same time, if you are ahead by a little bit and you don't want to risk the ratios, then, you know, stay away. I think it depends where you are in your game.
I mean, I know that this is how statistics work, but in his appearances with the Rays, he's gone 3 innings, 4 innings, 5 innings, with 2 hits and 1 earned run allowed in every single one. So as he continues to add an inning while not adding hits and earned runs, by the time he gets to 9 innings of 2 hits and 1 run, I think he'll take that. So I say start him until he gets to that 9, and then he'll, like, break the space-time continuum, and I'm not sure where we go from there.
Against Boston?
No, I'm just joking. I would start him against Boston.
Well, this is the thing, though. I'd like the Glasnow discussion, though, because, Leo, you watch them a lot. Do you think the Rays are looking at him as a full-time starter for September, or do you think that this is kind of piecemealing it together like the opener? Do you think he's never going to get past the 75-pitch count?
I think that that's probably, now that Archer isn't there, and with Snell kind of coming back off of injury, Faria coming off of injury, I would doubt that anyone is really logging 80, 90, 100 pitch games. I think that at this point with where they are and what they're looking to do in terms of just getting reps for guys and kind of getting ready for next season, realizing that they're not contending, I wouldn't count on anyone going that deep into games. Like, we saw Snell leaving in a perfect game. You know, Faria is slowly working his way back. Glasnow is maybe the healthiest, so you might see him going the longest, but I still think that that's 5 or 6 innings at the most, and that's if he's efficient.
Leo, I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to say I'm not all in yet, but I want to be all in on Glasnow. I think they're going to treat him like a starter in September. I just like the guy.
Right. I do too. I just, you know, is a starter for the Rays, even if he is the starter and not just an opener or a mix and match guy, is that even still going to be more than 2.5 times through the lineup, 3 times through the lineup?
Sunday looking like a very good day for streaming, AJ. You mentioned about trying to load up on points to catch up in a head-to-head matchup. I think this is a very good day to do this. Let's get to the ESPN games first. The ESPN Plus game is at 4.05 p.m. Eastern. Again, I have to add the hour here. It is the Astros at the Athletics. Justin Verlander versus Sean Manaea. So we're looking at the two aces of the staff facing each other in that game. I think everybody's going to start those guys in fantasy. And then the night game, ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, is at 7 o'clock. This is, if I understand correctly, the Williamsport game. This is the Little League World Series game where they play in the small field, AJ. It's Mets at Phillies and Jason Vargas at Nick Pivetta. So accounting for the ballpark factor, some of the energy going on with the circumstances of that game, do you start either pitcher? I think you know which one I would be leaning to if you're using one.
Well, if you're using one, you're using Pivetta. You're not using Vargas.
16 yeah, runs, man!
I think definitely you start the hitters because the hitters are definitely going to be a little bit more prone to those extra base knocks to get it over the fence. It's going to be a fun game to watch. All I got to say is thank goodness the Marlins aren't there because I don't want Jose Urena talking to those kids, bringing it back first, full circle.
Oh, man.
I can confirm that game is at the BB&T ballpark at historic Bowman Field in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, which is also home to the Wildcats of the Pennsylvania College of Technology. Fun fact.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, I'm looking forward to that game. That's always been a fun one. I enjoyed it last year, and I like the fact that we're doing this annually. I like the games in different circumstances, and especially with the kids with the Little League World Series. I mean, I always enjoy watching that.
If you're going to roll the dice on, like, one player to, like, have a huge night, Todd Frazier, I mean, he's going to be, like, really reliving his youth. So I think he's certainly a guy to target for that game.
Isn't Conforto also, he's got ties? He played in the Little League World Series, I think.
He's played Little League in the tournament. I don't know if he made it to Williamsport. I know he played in the tournament.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think he played some games there, but yeah, I don't know if he made I can't remember the qualifications. I remember Frazier clearly from New Jersey and all. But then if you're going to endorse him, you start Pivetta. I would.
Oh, yeah. 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 I think it's still the Mets who they're exploding now. You know, it'll be just like the Mets to finish the season 11-1 in their last 12 and just bookend this disaster.
Oh, boy.
Wouldn't it?
I can't confirm.
It would be.
Sorry, I can't confirm Michael Conforto did play in the Little League World Series.
Excellent.
He was eliminated immediately, but he did make it.
Oh, okay. There you go.
The one and done. Okay, we get it. It's like the wild card playing game. Streaming starters for Sunday, I like Jake Odorizzi against Detroit, the home game. Reynaldo Lopez against Kansas City is kind of intriguing to me. And I'm all in on Germán Márquez on road starts. I don't care that it's an Atlanta game. I'm all in on Germán Márquez. I don't know, AJ, I might be crazy.
No, you know what? That was the name I was looking at as well. Totally on board with that for you. Especially again, it is a Sunday game. It is a day game, and it's after a night game. secondary lineup for the Braves, absolutely.
I am crazy either way, though. You know, that's clearly. All right. We'll get to the hash browns next after this break. So, Leo, I think last time when I read these and we weren't editorial watchdogged, I used the ridiculously silly, slow, patient voice.
Yeah,
I don't think I'll use it.
Yeah.
I think I'll use the regular voice today.
Yeah, I like regular voice, Tristan. Or if you want the watchdog to read you some hash browns, I can go for some hash browns.
Yeah, we could. You know, it's the least I could do for missing the intro to you at the beginning of the show, and I'm sorry for that.
No, it's okay.
You were so quiet.
Again, the question that AJ posed via email a couple weeks ago, who watches the watchdogs? No one. I can sneak around undetected. Anyway, someone who wishes he was sneaking around undetected, Evan Gaddis. Brett asks, it's been a pretty tough couple of weeks for Evan Gaddis, so is this something that you're expecting a bounce back? Or is it just probably time to move on from him in fantasy?
Evan Gaddis. It's too late to buy low now. Two homers yesterday. It's Evan Gaddis for you. Streaky guy, all power.
Right, by the time we get the hash brown, all of a sudden. Yep.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Brett's hash brown lit a fire under Evan Gaddis. And sometimes this happens. We have a little fun saying that that's clearly what got Gaddis to hit the two home runs. Does he go back to the cold streak? Maybe. It's just the nature of a player like this. I still think Evan Gaddis is a top five fantasy catcher. AJ?
An 0-for-19 streak certainly lowers his value. So maybe someone was set up and got rid of him and to pick him up. He's probably an improvement over a lot of people out there. You know, batting average is not going to help you. We know this. But he's not striking out all that much, relatively. So, he's worth it.
All right. Catchers are really bad. So even a bad catcher is still pretty useful, especially if you get into two catcher leagues.
Hey, one of the catchers, not Taylor Cole. I keep confusing these two because of the pitcher the Angels are using. Taylor Ward, I think it is. Catcher eligible, playing third base for the Angels now.
Yeah, that's
just a thought.
Yeah, and isn't the Keener Falefa also? I don't know if he's playing these days, but he became catcher eligible too. So if you're really desperate, there's a couple of guys out there that carry that strange eligibility. Thankfully, let's move to some players who are a little better but might not play. Michael asks, and we'll go rapid fire on this one. Just name one guy who you are on the verge of maybe picking up in a shallower league, because obviously in a deeper league, these guys might already be on a roster, or if it's Dynasty or Keeper, these guys are definitely on a roster. Which elite prospects do you think will get September call-ups, and what kind of impact do you think they will make? So I would like each of you to pick one and give me your expectation for what they will do.
Well, I'm going to leave the obvious guy on the table, and I'm going to throw Eloy Jimenez, just because that's a guy I have watched personally, and I like the full package. Power to all fields. Hit tool, quality, all fields, complete player, and he's in the right ballpark for the skill set. I think that Eloy Jimenez has got to be up no later than September 1st. Absolutely no question to me, and he needs to play every day. And I'll tell you, I expect immediate fantasy impact like I did with Acuna and Juan Soto.
That's a very good pick. I think he'll be probably joined up there by Michael Kopech, and that's the guy I'm interested in seeing come up. There's no reason for Chicago not to just bring up the entire farm. And so I think we'll have a hitter to watch and a pitcher to watch. And I think for a couple of weeks stretch when nobody knows exactly what to expect out of Kopech, I think he'll be just fine.
And I will answer the obvious questions. I don't think that we see the Blue Jays prospects, and that is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. My gut feeling is that we probably just don't see either of them. However, if you need a lottery pick, and you're trying to go for it, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is out there in your league, and you can hold him on a bench spot, you might as well, because he is going to hit for average and a little bit of power, or a lot of power, especially with the different baseball in the major leagues, allegedly. So I will
allegedly
answer the obvious question. I will answer the
allegedly
obvious question and say that probably Vlad ahead of Bichette in terms of the priority there. But he's going to be a fantastic player eventually. They just really have no reason to call him up. And honestly, they're more likely to activate Josh Donaldson and give him a run out for the last month rather than calling a guy like that up. But I think that time will tell, but I would not be holding my breath. We already
Leo, optimism. Optimism.
Well, no, optimism is that he'll continue to hit like 450 in AAA. So,
one in the majors.
Yeah. It would be very fun to watch him do that in the majors. Zach asks about Carlos Rodon. He has allowed only 9 earned runs since the beginning of July. So are you just riding this for the rest of the season? Or is this someone that if your trade deadline hasn't passed, you're looking to get as much value as you can for him?
I am. I've been all in on Carlos Rodon for years. Love the guy. I'm the guy who said that earlier in his career, I saw the ceiling being in the Clayton Kershaw range just because similar starts to their career where there was questionable command of all their pitches besides the slider, which is the put-away pitch for him. Slider performance still great this year. So that's not changed, but what has changed is fastball velocity. It's down ever so slightly, like a third of a mile per hour, but the performance and the command of it is a lot better. And if you watch him throw, that's the takeaway for me. That big improvement is what's propelling this hot streak. And yeah, in that division, there's going to be a greater number of favorable matchups as that division seems to be playing out the strings. I'm in. I'm all in on Carlos Rodon.
Interesting. I'm all out for the rest of this season. If not for a double play ball, he doesn't get a quality start. And if not for, he doesn't even get a win if Avalon throws one more bad pitch in the ninth inning there. I just don't think that there's enough around him to support him in terms of win count. I think he's running out of gas as far as I can see. And I think that's impacting the fastball as well. And he's a matchups play, and, I would probably, if I can get something for him that's a little more reliable for the rest of the season, I think I would make the move.
All right, and one last hash brown. I'm going off the board here, and I'm actually going to the national days that Kyle also always likes to include in the show notes. Saturday is National Fajita Day, and Sunday is National Soft Serve Ice Cream Day. So pick one, fajitas or soft serve ice cream. Go.
Soft serve ice cream for me with sprinkles. Yum.
Oh, it's totally ice cream. Now, if it was burritos, you might have had a competition there.
Yes.
For me, it's fajitas and it's not close.
Wow.
Yeah. Fajitas incredible when you get the really nice, like, hot pan with the crispy seared off steak or chicken or whatever. And
are they a sandwich?
Absolutely.
If you wrap them right, I guess they could be a sandwich. I don't know. We'll have to debate that one off the air.
Look, the thing is that fajitas, when the server comes to the table, is one of the few foods that is dangerous. And they warn you about, don't get too close to this food. It is dangerous. I'm not ordering something dangerous when I'm not paying attention to things.
No ghost peppers for you?
The worst thing that could happen with ice cream is it starts to drip down my arm and, I have to look stupid licking myself like a cat.
I have to say, I have experienced more discomfort from ice cream brain freeze than I ever had from fajita pan burns. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Eating it too quickly, afraid it's going to melt.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is I can't deny that it's good. So,
Leo, you know why I didn't pick fajitas?
Why?
The quality of fajita. You need to get, they have to be good.
Sure.
You need to get authentic fajitas, and I've had some bad ones at places you shouldn't be ordering.
Yeah. Like, if I'm going to, like, if McDonald's start, like, no offense to McDonald's, but, like, if they started offering a fajita and they also had their ice cream, I'd probably get their ice cream. But if I'm going to a really nice Mexican restaurant and they have fried ice cream or fajitas, I'd probably get the fajitas. Because, the higher the quality of the fajitas, the better. Because especially if it's steak, like, bad steak is a disappointment no matter where you get it.
Yeah, I love I can get the takeout fajitas from right down the street, although I like to go and get it authentically at the table, like AJ said. All right, that will wrap things up for today on the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Thank you, of course, to AJ Mass for filling in today. Thank you to Anthony Calatayud behind the glass. I've kept you busy pressing all those buttons. And thanks, of course, double thank you, triple thank you. How many thank yous should I offer you, Leo Howell, since I didn't get to introduce you right off the top?
8. It's my favorite number.
8? I owe you 8. Okay, so I'll give you thank you, 3 more, and I'll owe you 2 more afterwards. All right. Thank you, of course, the listener, for tuning in to today's show. We will be back on Monday. In the meantime, have yourself a great weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Ice cream.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.